Ender came in the door, still wet from his last dip in the lake. It was dark outside, and dark in the room where Graf waited for him. "Are we going now?" asked Ender. "If you want to," Graf said. "When?" "When you're ready." Ender showered and dressed. He was finally used to the way civilian clothes fit together, but he still didn't feel right without a uniform or a flash suit. "I'll never wear a flash suit again," he thought. "That was the battle school game, and I'm through with that." He heard the crickets chirping madly in the woods. In the near distance, he heard the crackling sound of a car driving slowly on gravel. What else should he take with him? He had read several of the books in the library, but they belonged to the house, and he couldn't take them. The only thing he owned was the raft he had made with his own hands. That would stay here, too. The lights were on now in the room where Graf waited. He, too, had changed clothing. He was back in uniform. They sat in the back seat of the car together, driving along country roads to come at the airport from the back. "Back when the population was growing," said Graf, "they kept this area in woods and farms, watershed land. The rainfall here starts a lot of rivers flowing, a lot of underground water moving around. The earth is deep, and right to the heart it's alive, Ender. We people only live on the top like the bugs that live on the scum of the still water near the shore." Ender said nothing. We train our commanders the way we do because that's what it takes. They have to think in certain ways. They can't be distracted by a lot of things, so we isolate them. You keep you separate, and it works. But it's so easy when you never meet people, when you never know the earth itself, when you live with metal walls keeping out the cold of space. It's easy to forget why earth is worth saving, why the world of people might be worth the price you pay. So that's why you brought me here, thought Ender. With all your hurry, that's why you took 3 months, to make me love Earth. Well, it worked. All your tricks worked. Valentine, too, she was another one of your tricks, to make me remember that I'm not going to school for myself. Well, I remember. I may have used Valentine, said Graf, and you may hate me for it, Ender, but keep this in mind. It only works because what's between you, that's real, that's what matters. Billions of those connections between human beings. That's what you're fighting to keep alive. Ender turned his face to the window and watched the helicopters and dirigibles rise and fall. They took a helicopter to the IF spaceport at Stumpy Point. It was officially named for a dead hegemon, but everybody called it Stumpy Point, after the pitiful little town that had been paved over when they made the approaches to the vast islands of steel and concrete that dotted Pamlico Sound. There were still water birds taking their fastidious little steps in the salt water, where mossy trees dipped down as if to drink. It began to rain lightly, and the concrete was black and slick. It was hard to tell where it left off, and the sound began. Graf led him through a maze of clearances. Authority was a little plastic ball that Graf carried. He dropped it into chutes, and doors opened, and people stood up and saluted, and the chutes spat out the ball, and Graf went on. Ender noticed that, at first, everyone watched Graf, but as they penetrated deeper into the spaceport, people began watching Ender. At first, it was the man of real authority, they noticed, but later, where everyone had authority, it was his cargo they cared to see. Only when Graf strapped himself into the shuttle seat beside him did Ender realize Graf was going to launch with him. "How far?" asked Ender. "How far are you going with me?" Graf smiled thinly. "All the way, Ender." "Are they making you administrator of command school?" "No." So they had removed Graf from his post at battle school solely to accompany Ender to his next assignment. How important am I, he wondered. And like a whisper of Peter's voice inside his mind, he heard the question, "How can I use this?" He shuddered and tried to think of something else. Peter could have fantasies about ruling the world, but Ender didn't have them. Still thinking back on his life in battle school, it occurred to him that although he had never sought power, he had always had it. But he decided that it was a power born of excellence, not manipulation. He had no reason to be ashamed of it. He had never, except perhaps with Bean, used his power to hurt someone. And with Bean, things had worked well after all. Bean had become a friend, finally, to take the place of the lost ally, who in turn took the place of Valentine. Valentine, who was helping Peter in his plotting. Valentine, who still loved Ander, no matter what happened. And following that train of thought led him back to Earth, back to the quiet hours in the center of the clear water, ringed by a bowl of tree-covered hills. That is the Earth, he thought. Not a globe thousands of kilometers around, but a forest with a shining lake, a house hidden at the crest of the hill, high in the trees, a grassy slope leading upward from the water, fish leaping and birds strafing to take the bugs that lived at the border between water and sky. Earth was the constant noise of crickets and winds and birds, and the voice of one girl who spoke to him out of his far-off childhood. The same voice that had once protected him from terror, the same voice that he would do anything to keep alive, even return to school, even leave Earth behind again for another 4 or 40 or 4,000 years. Even if she loved Peter more.